Our seventh case for this morning is N. Gao against Eric Holder, Attorney General. Ms. Torres.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Alexa Torres, and I represent the petitioner Gao N. in this case. This case involves a petition for review of a decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals in which the Board denied the petitioner's motion to reopen. There are a number of issues in this case, but I would like to begin with addressing the Board's finding that the petitioner did not establish changed country conditions. In support of the finding that changed country conditions were not established, the Board examined the background evidence, finding that much of the background evidence predates the March 15, 2010 hearing.
So just to be precise, we're talking about country conditions with regard to the way the Chinese authorities treat underground religions, right? We're not on population control.
Correct. So they found that much of the background evidence predates the prior hearing, and they found that this evidence shows that persecution and repression of Christians was already occurring in China. So thus they found there is no change, that this has been ongoing. However, in discussing this same evidence, the board also found that this evidence does not specifically relate to the petitioner's locality in the Fujian province. So putting these two findings together, the board essentially found that the background evidence does not show persecution of Christians in China, in the local Fujian province prior to the March 15, 2010 hearing. Now, this is very significant because, as the board did point out on the first page of its decision, conditions at the time of the original asylum claim must be offered to compare to the present conditions in order to establish that there's been a change. So what we have here is evidence that predates the March 15, 2010 hearing, which, as the board found, does not show that Christians are persecuted in the Fujian province prior to March 15, 2010. Contrast that with the evidence.
Isn't that because that wasn't his claim at the time? His claim was a population control claim?
Yes, at the time it was.
So why would we require a comparison when the claim has morphed into something different?
Submitted in support of this motion to reopen, we did file evidence of the conditions prior to the hearing in order to contrast that with the current conditions.
So in a sense, your motion to reopen is really adding a ground or, you know, adding or substituting a ground.
Yes, Your Honor.
For relief, and you thought you needed to show the change from 2005.
Because it wasn't filed within the 90 days from the prior hearing.
Right. But see, my issue is this. The evidence of worsening of treatment of various religious groups, the house churches in particular, is pretty vague, and it seems to me it's up to the board to decide if there's enough of a degradation in this treatment to justify reopening. It seems like a very fact-bound consideration that's not really ours to make.
That's correct, Your Honor. And that's why the evidence that postdates the March 15, 2010 hearing, it does establish prima facie eligibility. And when you contrast it with the previous evidence, it also shows changed country conditions.
Why does it? No, but I'm asking why it does. I mean, I'm not saying that house churches are getting wonderful treatment in China, but they, not everything is persecution either. I mean, it has to fall below some level, and the board seems to make the decision, I'm looking at its opinion here, that whatever change has occurred isn't really material enough to justify reopening, and on top of that, they throw in that it's not specific enough to Fujian province, and there's no reason to think that he in particular would be a target.
Yes, the International Religious Freedom Report for July to December 2010, it doesn't address specifically the Fujian province, but just to give a context and background of what is going on in China, it does state that the government's level of respect for religious freedom declined during this reporting period. But to get to the more specific...
When it uses the word decline, I guess that's what I'm not doing this very well, but decline could mean from, you know, good to medium or from good to awful, you know, and I don't know what it means.
The petitioner also did submit very specific evidence of people being persecuted in not only his local Fujian province, in the same city, Changla City, and then also in the same town, Yutian Town.
Is this a specific example? Is his name Chen or something?
Yes, Your Honor. Chen Zhengjian.
Seems to be the only evidence, isn't it?
Well, I mean, if you put it into context, thinking about the fact that we're arguing that prior to, and the board did agree, that prior to the previous hearing, there is no evidence of this persecution going on. So it'd be very difficult to find evidence of that. But currently, in 2012, in January of 2012, petitioner's relative was practicing his religion, attending church underground, when policemen barged in, arrested all of these members, interrogated them, beat them, and forced them to sign guarantee letters that they would no longer practice their religion. A reasonable person in the petitioner's circumstance returning to that locality would certainly fear persecution. Now,
the board says that we don't know what the relationship is. They think Mr. Chen's affidavit is vague in general.
Yes, as to the relationship issue, the petitioner's asylum application, the petitioner's affidavit, and Mr. Chen's letter all are consistent with each other in referring to him as the petitioner's relative. And I submit to you, Your Honors, that as a practical matter, whether Mr. Chen is his uncle, cousin, or brother-in-law, that doesn't answer the question as to whether the petitioner faces persecution returning to the same locality where this person was persecuted for being
You're
a Christian.
You're saying the board just seized on an irrelevant detail when it was worried about how close the relationship was?
Yes, Your Honor. And also, as to the allegation that the letter is vague in general, I mean, there's numerous details in this letter. Mr. Chen talks about where he's from, when he became a Christian. He specifies that he only goes to underground churches, and he explains why. He talks about the size of the gatherings, when he was arrested, how many people were arrested, how many police were there, how long he was interrogated. I mean, he goes into great detail in this letter. And another point that the board brought up regarding this letter is they stated that it's not relevant because they're not from the same village. It's important to note, though, that, as I stated earlier, they are from the same province, Fujian province, the same city, Changla City, and the same town, Yutian town. Not only that, in Mr. Chen's letter, he states that when he was arrested, he was taken to the Public Security Bureau of Changla City. So he does not state that he was arrested by village officials. He was not taken to any police department in the village. He was taken to the Changla City Bureau Police Department. And so it appears as though these city officials have jurisdiction over these types of cases in this locality.
Of course, this is an interesting precedent if someone just comes over here and then converts to Christianity.
Yes,
and
Your Honor.
They get to stay. That might cause a lot of conversion.
You know, the board did make a statement that this was changed personal circumstances, but changed personal circumstances and changed country conditions are not mutually exclusive. And also, if you look at the petitioner's motivation as to why he became a Christian, he talks about how, I mean, he left China in 2005. His wife, who was forcibly sterilized by the Chinese government, and I'm not addressing that issue, but his wife, who was forcibly sterilized by the Chinese government, even though they wanted to have more children, his wife and his two daughters that are 11 years old and 6 years old are still in China. He's been separated from them. He was depressed. He became a Christian because it made him feel, it helped him with his depression. So that was his motivation. I believe that's a legitimate reason to seek out something that would comfort you.
It's all well and good. I just look at it. We same play, you know, as Judge Wood knows, I was concerned, same concern about Falun Gong. You go back there and practice, and of course, if you do it in your home, nobody's going to bother you. But if you go out in a group, which is what bothers the Chinese, mm-hmm. they don't like people, a bunch of people getting together. They don't like the churches, the home churches and all that. There's no question there's a problem. And I guess my problem is first of all, I'll ask her about whether they're really going to send him back.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's unlikely. And I look at the same thing. Here's a guy that's his wife, his sterilized wife at home, no longer able to have children. He's got two little girls there, and he's still here. I mean, this is a dilemma.
Yes, and that is the reason. I understand you're concerned about the floodgates issue, but that should be taken up at the congressional
issue. But I'm only looking at it just, first of all, I'll talk more. I already took your time, so I don't want to belabor it. Maybe we'll give you a little bit extra time.
Thank you.
Ms. Jones.
May it please the Court, Tracy Jones representing the respondent, Eric H. Holder, Jr. The Court in this case should deny the petition for review because the petitioner failed to show changed country conditions to the point that he's prima facie eligible for relief. So therefore, the time limitation should not be excused. As the petitioner noted, the motion to reopen was untimely, and there's no contest in that fact.
This is the one that was untimely just by a thread, though, right?
Yes, Your Honor. It was still outside of
or something. Yeah,
you're correct. It was one day outside of the time limit or the time period that's allotted for motions to reopen, but nonetheless, it was still untimely. Mm-hmm. The petitioner in this case argues changed country conditions. However, the evidence in the record does not support that contention. Instead, the evidence in the record shows that the petitioner actually had a change in personal circumstances.
Well, but there is also the statement that the word is declining, right? The position of the house, churches, and the like is declining. Isn't there some need for the board to take a look and see what that really means?
As far as
How bad is it? I mean, you know, if they're breaking into people's homes when they're trying to worship and rounding them up and arresting them, that's something that we usually think of as persecution.
Yes, Your Honor, but for reopening, the petitioner has the burden to establish that there are changed country conditions and that because of these changed country conditions that they're prima facie eligible.
Right. No, I understand that, but I think the petitioner's argument is that there are two moving parts. You know, yes, his personal conditions changed in that he converted to Christianity after his arrival in the United States, and if things had remained exactly the same in China, that would be an easy case to deny. If at the same time, let's take it a step further, you know, China started throwing in jail every Christian they could find, that's a change in China. And so one can certainly have a change in country conditions at the same time as somebody's personal circumstances change.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true, but that's not the case here. The evidence shows that although there has been mistreatment of Christians in China, this is a continuation. It's nothing materially changed here. The evidence that the petitioner submitted to demonstrate changed country conditions is from 2007 to 2009, which predates their merits hearing, which was held in 2010. Also, the 2010 Religious Freedom Report that was submitted shows that actually the prosecution of underground Christians in churches are actually varies from province to province. So in some provinces, they have legalized religions outside of the five nationally recognized religions, and so there's no evidence in the record that the petitioner in their native province, which is the Fujian province, would be targeted, or anyone similarly situated to the petitioner would be targeted.
The provinces in China are quite different. The languages are different. You're not saying that he could just move somewhere else, are you?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that there's no evidence in the record to show that the petitioner or anyone similarly situated to the petitioner would actually be persecuted if returned to the Fujian province.
But this is really more well-founded fear of future persecution. I mean, the board says nobody in China knows right at the moment about his religious conversion. But his point is, as soon as I get back to China, I'm going to be worshiping in a house church. And it seems to me at that point, he automatically comes, if you look at Mr. Chen's affidavit, for example, he comes under scrutiny.
Well, there were issues with Mr. Chen's affidavit that the board did actually address in their decision. Outside of the affidavit, there was no other evidence that underground church members in the Fujian province are actually being persecuted or mistreated in the Fujian province. Mr. Chen's affidavit, there was numerous issues with. It was very general and very vague. The petitioner's counsel argues that he did provide details about the location or the members, but that's just not true. The affidavit only mentioned that he was arrested along with 15 other members of the church. It doesn't give any other evidence or details outside of that. Mr. Chen's affidavit talks about him being arrested in the Zuhu village in China, which is not the same village that the petitioner is going to be returning, and that's based on his own testimony. So this piece of evidence does not show that the petitioner would be persecuted if returned to the Fujian province in China.
I could always ask this question, and that is about who gets sent back to China. I don't know the rumors I hear, but you can't even get a visa if there's something pending in some kind of an immigration issue that they don't even give you a visa. And then whether we are really, obviously nobody wants voluntary departure. I've always noticed that. And so do we send them back?
Well, as of right now, yes, you can, Your Honor. As of right now, yes, he can be removed. There's no stay of removal enforced here. And also, the final order of removal is from 2011. He can be sent back now. Does the government have travel documents to send him back? Probably not right now.
This is the problem here. We seem to run into this dead end.
Yes.
And we're doing a lot of hypothetical, because I'd be very curious to know if a Christian, converted Christian who is sent back, what happens? And what's the country report say with people who return after getting out of there? I think, does he still owe $60,000 to the snakehead?
Believe...
sent $2,000 back?
Yes, he sends back $2,000 a month back to his wife to pay him off. At the hearing, the final amount that was still owed, I believe, was, $10,000. The total was $70,000 that he owed, but from the time he arrived and since the hearing, those, I believe, 5 or 6 years, he had been sending back $2,000 monthly to his wife to pay off that debt.
That's what he's still paying off the debt for getting over here, huh?
Yes, which it possibly could be paid off at this time, but that information is not in the record.
Well, that's all just baffling to me. That this is the kind of thing that goes on there, and. I would feel, if I was a father, be desperately want to see your kids and your wife.
Yes.
And yet he's trying to stay here for reasons that he might be persecuted because of religion. We don't know anything about her religion. These are sort of hypothetical questions that I'm asking because we don't have the evidence that I would like to see about exactly, as Judge Wood brings up, what is going on with home churches, and are they being bothered, or do they really care? I think most of what I think with China, they care about too many people getting together, and they don't like that. And what's happening in some provinces over there where they're taking land away, and now they're having some uprisings and some other things, that China's got some real problems. The people there who are combining together and opposing government, which is something different. So, and there's a lot going on, but one of the things that isn't going on, we're not sending them back.
Well, at any point, if the travel documents are issued, he can be removed.
He can
be removed. But I will also like to remind Your Honor, it's not the government's burden to show prima facie eligibility. That burden rests solely with the petitioner, and he failed to do that here. Yeah. The conditions, the 2010 Religious Freedom Report, again, I emphasize, only showed that it's... that the mistreatment of underground church members varies from province to province. It didn't specifically indicate that anybody who's in the Fujian province that's practicing in an underground church would actually be mistreated or persecuted.
Mm-hmm. Well, your case is strong.
Yes.
I still wonder what goes on.
Yes, Your Honor. But, again, that's the petitioner's burden to present that evidence, and they just did not do so in this case. If the court doesn't have any other questions, I would like to rest on the brief.
That would be fine. Thank you very much. I think your time ran out, but we'll give you another minute.
It is true, Your Honor, that the background evidence states that the enforcement or the persecution of Christians does vary from locality to locality. And that's why it's really important not to ignore the evidence from the specific locality that the petitioner comes from. The board failed to properly consider this evidence, specifically the letter from Mr. Chen, in which he states that he was persecuted while attending underground church. The petitioner did
the board criticizes that letter for lack of corroboration, among other things.
Yes, they did.
It's entitled to ask for corroboration, is it not?
Yes, Your Honor. But, I mean, if the petitioner had submitted letters from two people who were arrested, they may ask for three or four. If he had submitted three or four, maybe four, five or six, they would ask for. But he doesn't have to prove his whole case on the motion to reopen. He needs to prove prima facie eligibility. And if the unless the letter is inherently unbelievable, it should be accepted as true. The contents of it should. And it should be pointed out that...
So where's the legal standard for that? You say that as though it's in the law.
Yes, the Board of Immigration has... numerous circuits have cited to the board's finding. I can cite them. They're not in my brief,
no,
Your Honor.
Okay.
But it should be pointed out, too, that the petitioner did merit a presumption of credibility at the hearing below, as there is no adverse credibility finding made. And, in fact, the judge did find that he testified candidly, so he's a believable witness. So if believed, this letter does establish prima facie eligibility. A reasonable person in the petitioner's situation would certainly fear being persecuted upon return to his locality in China.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. Our final case.